Yesterday, a wonderful conference was held here at Morningside in our sanctuary. Over 150 Presbyterian pastors and lay people from all over Greater Atlanta gathered here in our building to be inspired and given practical ways to revitalize their congregations. Aware of the alarming trends of decline in the Presbyterian churches all over the United States, these seekers came to Morningside to hear stories and strategies of church transformation. We welcomed folks from large churches and small churches, suburban, rural, and urban congregations, diverse in every imaginable way. But what drew them together and drew them here was a call to this moment. Throughout the gathering, there was a palpable energy and a strong sense of urgency that now is the time for us to reclaim our unique, God-given ministry and pursue it with all our imagination and passion. It is no secret why this conference took place at Morningside. I can assure you it was about much more than our wonderful parking and our delicious coffee. Seekers came here because this is a congregation that has found its mission in recent years. And I believe that others all over our denomination and all over our city are determined to do the same thing. Perhaps we stand on the edge of one of those defining moments of revival in the church. Perhaps. We can find excellent examples of these defining moments in the scriptures of our tradition. How about the disciples in this morning's gospel reading from Luke? Up until this point in the story, the disciples have been innocent bystanders to the life-changing work of Jesus in the world. They stood at a distance as he performed miracles, healed the sick, preached new possibilities, proclaimed prophetic truth to power, and unfolded these profound parables. The disciples stood at a distance, and that distance provided safety and comfort for those who had left so much behind to follow the one they called Lord. They stood at a distance. But comfort can breed complacency and apathy. As the pastor of any historic established congregation might tell you. Last week, as part of my interim pastor training at Calvin Center, we were divided into groups of four or five, and each group was charged with creating a fictional congregation based on a scenario card that was given to us. Here's the scenario my group was given. Your historic downtown church has resisted every change in culture and society for over 100 years. Most of your members in a thriving downtown community are content to rest on their 19th century laurels and their $100 million endowment. Remember, I said the church was fictional. We chose as our congregation's name, with apologies to Lake Wobegon, Our Lady of Perpetual Inertia. comfortable complacency has been the undoing of more than a few congregations. Perhaps a defining moment is upon us. Knowing well the dangers of comfort and safety, Jesus makes a bold move in the 9th chapter of Luke. We are told that he called the disciples together off the sidelines, gave them power and authority, and sent them out. The Greek noun is apostles. The disciples become apostles, those sent. No longer safe on the sidelines, the disciples are sent to proclaim and practice the kingdom of God. They were called to live out the faith they had confessed. And it is in the doing that the disciples are transformed and the church is born. When did it happen to you? What moment or event or person called you beyond the sidelines of faith? Was it a need in the community that you just knew God was calling you to fill? Was it a deep, soulful longing for something more than a life lived for self alone? Was it a wake-up call from a friend or a loved one? Was it some joy or tragedy that opened the door to faith? Perhaps you are still waiting for that moment of call and clarity to come, that defining moment when you, like the disciples, are pushed out beyond comfort and routine into a life of active faith. Anyone who has experienced such an epiphany knows that it is a mixed blessing. To hear a call from God to active faith means making changes. And this is where the warm and cuddly spirituality of much contemporary Christianity comes up short. No divine call comes without a command. And the command of Jesus to his disciples might give us a sense of seriousness about our mission. Because Jesus sends the disciples out, and when he does, he commands them. He insists that they take nothing for the journey. No staff, bread, bag, or money. This is not just traveling light. The disciples are told to leave even the essentials behind. He seems to know intuitively that our greatest fear, when we leave the safety of distant observation, our greatest fear is that we won't have what it takes. And so he leaves the disciples with nothing other than the grace of God and the goodwill of others. Most biblical scholars agree that the instructions of Jesus here are intentional to make a point, and almost all of them say the point is something like this. The command to take nothing for the journey forces the disciples to rely completely on God for their ministry. I agree with that. The disciples will undergo a number of trials and difficult tests in the months and years ahead, and throughout it, they need to know that God provides for them in the midst of trouble. But particularly in the Gospel of Luke, I think something different may be going on as well. Because despite the insistence of prosperity gospel entrepreneurs, you will note that God does not rain down tunics from heaven. At least not in this call story. No, to take nothing for the journey forces the disciples not only to depend on God's grace, it also forces them to rely on the other. Perhaps most importantly, to rely on those whom they will serve. Jesus knows they won't get far on their journey without bread or money, and so they will have to depend on the generosity and kindness of other travelers as they go about this new mission. With all of you, I have spent the week reading reports of the utter devastation in the nation of Haiti. We have all prayed for that nation's people who must now struggle to survive in the aftermath of the earthquake. The people who have been nearest to my heart this week have been the residents of St. Joseph's Home for Boys. St. Joseph's is a sacred place for me, a wonderful orphanage and guest house in Port-au-Prince, operated by my friend Michael Geilenfeld. I have been a guest in this home on two trips to Haiti, most recently last April, when Sarah and I spent a week there. The first message I received from friends in Port-au-Prince last week was certainly a mixed bag of positive and negative. It read, St. Joseph's is destroyed. All of the boys are accounted for, and only two injuries. Please pray for Haiti and the St. Joseph's family. The pictures of the destruction were overwhelming. They were hard to believe. This beautiful building and beacon of Christian hospitality reduced to a pile of rocks. Over the next several days, I received many messages, including some from a friend named Amy, whose husband had flown down to take much-needed supplies. A short email from Amy sits on my desk to remind me of the hope woven into despair. "I just talked to Michael at St. Joseph's," she said. "He is upbeat and hopeful. And as he laughed, my heart filled with joy. He says people all over are gathering in open spaces, and they pray and sing all night. We will walk through the fire with God on our side." When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. Michael takes his place in a long line of prophetic voices crying out for courage and hope at a time when both are scarce. Like the prophets of the Old Testament, he stands in the midst of tragedy, and he proclaims hope. Relying on the grace of God and the generosity of other human beings, Michael's faith remains strong. And as I consider the hospitality that he and the St. Joseph's family showed me, I can see why he is defiantly hopeful. God provides. And God provides all of us as ministers to one another. All we have is all we need, because we live in a world of abundance. God has created a magnificent world with more of every kind of resource than we could ever imagine. The question that is left to us is this: how will we use the abundance that God has entrusted to us? It is a question for all who have more than enough to survive and to share. It is also a question, I believe, for the Morningside congregation in the weeks and the months ahead. Can we trust that we have what it takes? Enough faith and courage, enough dollars and energy to pursue with passion God's mission in the world. The Church of Jesus Christ on North Morningside Drive and all around the world does not exist for its own sake. We are not an alliance of like-minded individuals, and we are not a religious glee club. The church wasn't even our idea. In one of those defining moments, on the day of Pentecost, the church was born under the authority of our sovereign God, and it continues to live under God. We are called into existence and commissioned to serve God in ministries of justice and compassion each day. This worship service each week nourishes us and reminds us that all we have is all we need. We have all we need to be about God's work in the world. And then that worship pushes us out into the world, where we will encounter all kinds of opportunities for mission and witness. Worship is the place where we hear the message afresh each week. You have been given power and authority. You have been sent out apostles to proclaim and to heal. And what you already have among and within you is more than enough to get started. When did it happen to you? When were you forced beyond the sidelines of faith and told, you have all you need, now get started? For me, it was the summer of 2007. I was visiting with an inmate at Metro State Women's Prison in South Atlanta. She had just received the difficult news that custody of her son was going to be taken away while she was in prison. It was a tough visit. As I sat with her, she spoke openly of her hopelessness and despair, her heartbreak. I tried to provide what comfort I could, painfully aware of how inadequate my words were. When it was time to go, I hesitantly asked if we could pray together, trying to buy some time and think of something to say in my prayer. She responded that she would like to pray this time. I breathed a sigh of relief, and she began to speak candidly with God. She prayed for herself, that God would give her courage and peace, and that God would make for her a way out of no way. She prayed for her son, for his foster family, and for the rest of her family. But as she continued the prayer, I noticed a change in her petitions. She was praying for me and the other chaplains at Metro. She was praying for the guards and the counselors and the administrators who work there. She was praying for homeless children in Atlanta, not lucky like her son to have a foster family. She was praying for AIDS orphans in sub-Saharan Africa. She was praying for the powerful and the powerless. Her prayers reached the cell next door and the far corners of the globe. And when she closed her prayer, I asked her how she felt. It was then that one of those defining moments in faith came. I feel at peace. It always helps me to give my troubles to God and to pray for other people. You know, they're just like me. They need God to work in their lives. That's what we all pray for, God's presence and God's power in our lives. And then with a smile that displayed faith deeper than fear, she closed with these words. You know, Chris, when God is all you have, you learn that God has all you need. And I said, Amen.